Midweek Wednesday style, a good chat between you and I on March 13th, 2024 on Connecticut Today. I looked at an update from the state capitol on the possible use of video technology to increase school bus safety in cities and towns. Quinnipiac University Cybersecurity Program Director Dr. Fred Scholl stopped by to talk about the possibility of the TikTok app being banned in the U.S. and its alleged security risks. Hearst Connecticut Media editor and columnist Dan Haar stopped by for his weekly update to talk about the biggest statewide stories, while Connecticut Energy Marketers Association head Chris Herb talked about a public hearing at the state capitol regarding a so-called roadmap to EV adoption in the state.
So it didn't take me too long. I hopped over to my trusty little keyboard here to the right of my microphone as I was prepping for the show today, and I was able to type in the prerequisite search terms here. And I've never done this, what I was looking for, but I figured, let me see, let me use this as a reference point. And this is from a law firm's website here, and a lot of these summaries I found out are on law firm websites. Some of them are on the DMV website, but here's where we'll start. Failing to stop for a school bus, all right? This is like driver's ed 101 here. Right? We talked about this, but there's kind of been a little twist and turn in this story. Failing to stop for a school bus is a violation of Connecticut General Statute 14-279 and comes with a hefty fine of up to $500 for a first offense. That fine can reach up to $1,000 for a second offense, along with a potential 30-day jail sentence. So again, from this law firm's website, failing to stop for a school bus violates Connecticut General Statutes Section 14-279. So it's already in writing. I was told this. A lot of us were when we took college, or rather a high school driver's ed, or some people wait to college now before they get a license, whatever, and or they go to driving school. It's up to a $500 fine for a first offense. That fine can reach up to $1,000 for a second offense, along with a potential 30-day jail sentence. And another law firm here says they wrote all that out pretty much the same way. And then they added, yes, you can get jail time for a school bus violation. Now, why am I bringing this up? And Melissa's going to do a segment on her show tomorrow morning. But this story has popped up again. Now, you remember a couple of weeks ago, the mayor's office in Bridgeport, Mayor Joe Ganim, was upset that apparently nothing was being done here. He was, I guess, thinking there was some stonewalling going on because a bunch of buses in Bridgeport are equipped with these high-tech video systems that can clearly see a car or any sort of motor vehicle passing a school bus when it is stopped. Not when it's parked, not when it's pulled over and it's run maybe over and the driver is having his or her lunch or breakfast or maybe having an early dinner before they go and pick kids up and take them homes. Take them to their homes, rather. So we're talking about buses that are stopped that you and I learn, driver's ed 101, right? You stop. When the bus stops, the flashing red lights come on, and either the stop sign is deployed from the side of the bus, or the bar comes across the street to block the other lane or the right side of the lane you're in. And that means, hey, hold it up, show a little patience, let this kid or kids off of the bus and let them get safely to the side of the road and begin walking before you're in a hurry to go nowhere. And apparently the mayor a few weeks ago, I think back early in mid-February, wasn't happy with the fact that nothing was being done here. So now there's finally a law being moved through the General Assembly in Hartford, and it might work. Now, previous to this law, right, the DMV, the State Department of Motor Vehicles, pretty much handled the fines and the ticketing and the administrative process for somebody who was stupid enough, and yes, I use that phrase with all the love in my little pudgy Italian heart, stupid enough to pass a bus. Because if you do that and it's not some sort of an emergency or you're lost in a family tragedy or whatever, and even that's not really an excuse. But having said that, if you're dumb enough to do that, you deserve to maybe go to jail. I'd throw you in jail for a few days. I would. Where's my husband? Well, he's in jail. He'll be out whenever. But there's a new proposed law that would let municipalities, not the state per se. All right, you got this? So we're not talking about, the state doing something statewide on this further down the road. This would now expand the authority because the state can already do it. Like if you're stopped by a cop, the motor vehicle fine on this state statute, again, is between $100 and $500. And if you're dumb enough and stupid enough and need a proctologist for brain surgery, it's up to $1,000 and you can go to jail, which you probably should. But there's a new proposed law that would let cities and towns review security camera footage. Here we go. To ticket drivers caught illegally speeding by stop school buses. Yes. So, you know, Bridgeport has these buses, very expensive system, up to $4,000 per bus to take the continuous video of cars perhaps passing the buses. And we saw the clips of this when the story first came out a few weeks ago about the mayor being mad and City Hall being mad that nothing was being done. And again, says here on our news partner, News 8's website, the bill comes after Bridgeport released security footage last month of a car blowing past a school bus as people walked into the crosswalk. The city of Bridgeport, also released a report finding nearly 10,000 drivers illegally passed a school bus over the six-month period. There's no excuse for this, folks. There is no excuse for this. My point in this, the more surveillance, the better. And I know people are going to say, well, you know, only a cop should give out those tickets. Why? Explain that to me. If we have video systems at $3,000 and $4,000 per bus, as Bridgeport has, and they're just being used, and nothing is coming of it as far as kids' safety or law enforcement is concerned, what's the point? Is the game here because of politics and skin color and ethnicity and socioeconomic background? Is that what we're waiting on, to just get some kid or kids hurt when some idiot goes plowing by a bus? I don't get it. So the bill that's being considered in Hartford would let not the state, because the state statutes are already there and they're not being enforced. So the idea would be to let Connecticut cities and towns, the state's municipalities, review security camera footage, and then, aha, we see you, the bus was stopped. We have your license plate. You're going to get a ticket. A school bus safety program called Bus Patrol America helped the city of Bridgeport collect data by putting cameras on school buses. The chief growth officer of the company, Steve Randazzo, he'll be on tomorrow morning with Melissa. He testified during a committee public hearing yesterday, saying if law enforcement is able to rely on security video to ticket drivers, kids would be safer. He said, quote, this is the quote from News 8's website, in programs we serve across the country, we see anywhere between a 30 to 40% of violations in the first year. Democratic State Senator Haron Gaston of Bridgeport favors the bill. He said, quote, we want to give the municipal government a little more control over these localized issues. If you violate a passing bus in Bridgeport, we want the Bridgeport Police Department to review the camera footage and then issue the citation. Now, with that, look, there's a plus and a minus to that. Now, again, The idea here, I guess because of socioeconomic issues in cities like Bridgeport, under this bill, violators would be issued a $250 fine for the first offense. Gaston said the bill would also change the offense from criminal to civil. That would allow municipalities to take over the process. What's your thought on this? I am 100% in favor of this. And you may say, well, why give it to the individual cities and towns? Well, nothing's happening now. Nothing is happening now. Maybe, and as much as I don't like individual municipalities controlling this stuff in my gut, maybe that's the best way to see this through. But what do you think about this? And by the way, I did set this up as a question on our Facebook page, facebook.com/ WICC 600. It's a pretty straightforward question there. I laid it out as straightforward as I possibly could. We do a question today. Generally, should cities and towns be able to hand out $250 tickets to drivers illegally passing school buses based on video surveillance? So if you pass a school bus, which you shouldn't do, because if you do, you're a dummy. But if you do that, should that become not a criminal case, but a civil case, and then your local city or town police department would then be the ones to contact you and say, hey, we saw this, we have the video evidence, here is a $250 fine. This is never going to bother me, because I'm never going to pass a school bus. I'm not going to do it. I'm just not going to do it. Never have, still don't do it, and never will. So I'm not worried that I'm going to get caught up on that video, but are you okay with using video evidence? Not that there's a cop there to see this, because frankly, 99% of the time, the cops are busy doing something else. They're not going to see this. I'm sure a police officer in cities or towns sees this every so often, but come on. You know as well as I know, 99% of the time, they're not going to see this. So I have no problem. I have zero problem. I have less than zero problem relying on an up-to-date video system, seeing you, if you're at Stunad, go around a park school bus. And I know there are going to be people who say, well, the cops should do this. There aren't enough cops. There aren't enough cops. So please. Welcoming back a gentleman that helps us sort out the technical issues here. Yeah, I've been trying to inform you on the TikTok thing here. I'm guessing you may not have it on your phone, but your grandson, your son, your daughter, your granddaughter, your nieces, your nephews. So you're probably saying, yeah, what is all this stuff about TikTok? And my God, how did the House doesn't agree on anything. And they agreed to get rid of TikTok. So we're not going to get into the politics of this, but why are people worried about this? Dr. Fred Scholl back here on the program. He is the director of the cybersecurity program at Quinnipiac University. Fred, it's Paul here again. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, Paul. I'm good. How are you? Can you hear me okay?
Fred, you're coming in 5x5, and I'm not listening to you. I'm not listening to you over TikTok, so I guess the communist Chinese aren't going to care. But Fred, let's talk about this. For the uninitiated or people who just don't use this, they may have heard about TikTok. It's an app. It's a video sharing app that a lot of businesses use. But Fred, explain to my audience what the concern is here. You know, we don't go nuts over Facebook or Instagram or some of these other things, but why, Fred, is there such a concern with TikTok?
Exactly. So I think there is a concern. I certainly share it. So the net of this is that it's a Chinese company, and we don't know exactly who's on their board of directors or whatever, but I guess the risk is that there's influence from the Chinese Communist Party on this company. We know there is, right? And the Chinese at the same time have been very active in trying to hack into U.S. systems, government systems. There's this whole state-sponsored hacking that's been going on. They've been one of the major sponsors behind that. Mm-hmm. So there's a risk that they could influence this company. I think the parent company is ByteDance, which is a Chinese company. And so there's a risk. It might be small, but the impact is huge. So that's why people are I recommended banning it, I don't know, a year ago. So glad to see some progress on this.
Yeah, and Fred, from the nuts and bolts thing here, if we get into your background, you know, ByteDance has said, hey, okay, we understand the, oh my God, this is misinformation. In fact, we keep the data from all our American users. We keep that on separate servers. We insulate that. I guess they could put it on separate servers, but would that in any way insulate that data from them or not?
Not really, because, you know, I mean, the data obviously has no weight. With one click of a mouse, you can transfer all that data to another server in another country. So that's not, it's just too easy to influence somebody. And it wouldn't even have to be at the top of the Chinese Communist Party. You can envision, you know, there's a lot of people in the middle of that bureaucratic organization who are looking to make a name for themselves, you know, so anything could go wrong. That data could be moved anywhere, including back to Communist China in, you know, one mouse click.
There are rumors, Fred, and of course they deny it, but I've read what our cybersecurity folks like you say and what they said in the Trump years and what they're saying in the Biden years right now, of the possibility that what makes in their minds TikTok so dangerous is a keylogger or key logging software they claim that's embedded there. You and I know what that is, but explain that for my audience, because they may say, oh, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, it's all the same. No, it really isn't. What are the dangers of a keylogger if it's in the TikTok source code?
Yeah, I think there are dangers of that. So as I said, you know, the company is going to be under the influence of the Chinese Communist Party. And so there is a possibility. A keylogger is something that it's a piece of software. It starts out and ends up on possibly your phone or your laptop. And then it's logging all your keystrokes, including your password keystroke. So that there's a small risk of this, but obviously a giant impact, right? If everybody is logging into TikTok, and for whatever reason, maybe, you know, there's a time of war or stress or whatever, that type of keylogger gets put on our phones, that could, you know, make all our passwords visible, which would be a gigantic impact. So that's why there's a risk associated with this. So we basically don't, as far as hacking is concerned, and information security, we just don't trust the Chinese. And so that's what's behind this.
Dr. Fred Scholl is the guest. He directs the cybersecurity program at Quinnipiac University. Now, Fred, this looks like it's going to die in the Senate, but you never know. It got like 360 votes in the House, which is astounding these days. President Biden has said that he would sign it, but there is an out here, Fred, in the bill. Okay, you can keep TikTok going in the U.S. if you sell it to a U.S.-based entity. And I know in the Trump years there was rumors of, you know, Microsoft and Walmart buying it or whatever. But, Fred, even if a sale went through, I mean, how do you have to flush? Or, I mean, to be really secure from your end of things, are you going to tell people, okay, it was sold, but you have to reinstall the app, you have to flush all the data? And I guess my question is, even if that happened, is all that previous data really going to go away or not?
Yeah, it's just so hard to get rid of data. It's not going to go away. So I think if there was a sale, there are a lot of federal restrictions on transferring of ownership and things like that. So I'm hoping that the Commerce Department and their security folks, they bring in others in CISA or NSA, would take a close look at that. So, but I think that's a possibility. If they, you know, then they would be under the corporate governance of Securities and Exchange Commission, and hopefully they could take a close, careful look at it on a continuous basis.
Yeah, Fred, finally, you know, whether it's artificial intelligence, AI, or Facebook, or things like TikTok, is this, I mean, I don't want to seem like Doomsday Dan here, but is are we losing control, Fred, of all this? Is this getting to a point where even the best intentions here are almost impossible to pull off because of the scale of how pervasive this stuff is now?
Yes, I think that I think it's not black and white. So we just have to use more care in what we're doing and in our dealing with, countries like China and Russia. We haven't done our due diligence and homework on these types of relationships. So that's why we're in this position. We need to do that and foster our own economic development here so that we're in the top position.
Have you, I don't know whether you have classes this semester, Fred, or not, or what your teaching load is, but what are the students there at Quinnipiac? Are they, have you talked to any of them at all on this? Are they freaking out? Are they going to lose it if TikTok goes away? Are you sensing anything on campus or the staff there or whatever?
Yeah, I haven't really talked about that, but we are, you mentioned artificial intelligence. We're incorporating that into all of our classes. So we haven't discussed that current risk, but it is a good topic for next week. We're on spring break now, so I'll take that up.
All right. Let me know what happens. Dr. Fred Scholl, he directs the cybersecurity program at Quinnipiac University in Hamden. Fred, always good to chat with you. We'll keep in touch on this. Thank you, sir.
Likewise. Thanks, Paul. Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye. All right, there you go. Middle week Wednesday at this time. Dan Haar joins us from Hearst, Connecticut Media, columnist and editor and all that. Mr. Haar, good afternoon, sir, and how are you?
Good afternoon. A great day. I just spoke with Congressman Jim Himes about the TikTok vote.
Yeah, tell me about that. Now, I just had a guest on from a cybersecurity expert regarding that. Dan Haar, and he was talking to me about not so much the political angle of it, but the tech angle of it. What did Congressman Himes say? Because, Dan, you and I know it's rare that the House gets, 360 votes to agree on anything.
That's exactly right, and especially when the Lord Master of the Republicans, the cult leader himself, said that he opposed the ban.
Don't hold back now. Don't ever hold back.
Well, ever hold back. So, just be you.
Yo, thank you. So what was Congressman Himes, what was his attitude? He's on board with this, is he or not?
He's not. No, he's a no vote. Because
really?
I was a little surprised because he is, of course, the ranking Democrat and he would be chairman of intelligence in the House.
Yeah.
Should the Democrats take back the House, which I don't know how likely that is. But in any case, he would be the chairman. So he's, as he put it, more attuned to intelligence and national security issues than most House members, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And nonetheless, it's a freedom of expression issue for him because we're really talking here about a potential problem. There is no U.S. intelligence showing that ByteDance has, in fact, been pressured by the Chinese government to hand over any of this information. Second point he makes is that if China wants this information, they can get it. They can steal it, his words, or they can buy it. So for those reasons, he sides with freedom of expression, freedom of the press. Not that TikTok is what I would call the press, but freedom of the media, and it's what the founding fathers would have called it. And so for all those reasons, he voted no. The Connecticut delegation was divided. Representatives Larson and Hayes voted no.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Courtney and who am I forgetting? Jaloro voted yes.
Interesting. Yeah. It's interesting. Well, at least there is a difference of opinion there. And yet, Dan, if it gets by the Senate, which I don't think it's going to do, President Biden has already said he's going to sign this. Now he could always say, "Well, I said that, but I don't like what's in the bill." So I don't know, Dan. This is one of those. This issue was refreshing for me because it's not cutting down straight party lines, thank God.
Refreshing is exactly the idea that I had in mind as well. It is refreshing. That is exactly right. Because of exactly what you just said. That's I couldn't say it better. You're so used to the Hatfields and McCoys in Congress that when you do get an issue like this that's thoughtful on both sides. And as I said in a column I just filed, giving you guys, your listeners, a little advanced view, you got to hand it to both sides here, right? You've got to hand it to the Republicans for going against the Lord Master, who, for whatever of his own personal internecine, most likely financial reasons, voted suggested that they not back this. And you've got to hand it to those people who voted against the ban and risked being called soft on China.
Interesting. All right. Now, another thing, a connection here with our at least one of our members of Congress, Dan Haar, submarines. What's going on with that? And usually, Dan, you and I both know for years, Joe Courtney or whomever was, representing the 2nd District out in the state was able to work his magic on subs. But what's in the news now on that?
This is not as alarming an issue as it looks on first blush. This is a $3 billion a year submarine. The Pentagon orders two a year. This is the Virginia-class attack submarine, super-duper vehicle. And one of the reasons that it's not in the budget this year is because they are 12 subs behind schedule, 30 months behind, not 12 subs, 30 months behind schedule.
Yeah.
And so, you know, maybe you're saying, let's take it out of the budget this year and be more realistic, right? Maybe that's the way you look at it. You say, let's not try to budget something that we know isn't coming because we've already paid for these subs. So let's take another year as a break. That's Joe Courtney isn't buying it. He wants that sub in that budget every single year because this is thousands of jobs. And as you may recall, I don't know if you covered this in 2011. I believe it was 2011. Don't hold me to the years around then.
Yeah.
When they added the second sub, this was a huge deal.
Yes.
Right?
Like, yeah.
This is thousands of jobs. And, of course, it comes on the heels of the Sikorsky Blackhawk contract coming to an end at the time when the next generation helicopter has been ordered not from Sikorsky but from the rival Boeing.
And that's the... Yeah, and it just shows, Dan, that, you know, you mentioned Sikorsky and the electric boat thing. Like, you know, there's this, you know, Dan, I've always said on my show, there's this kind of innate, I don't want to say danger, but we should always be reminded that, you know, because of world affairs and Defense Department contracts, you know, Connecticut's damn lucky when it comes to situations like this, Dan, because as you say, it's normally, you know, two submarines a year and a boatload of helicopters, and God forbid if those ever went away.
Actually, the most dangerous aspect of the Pentagon's budget, which I'm going to need to look into, we all should look into, which is going to be much more of a potential threat, is a cutback in the F-35. Now, that's fewer jobs, but it's a lot of jobs, and it's Pratt & Whitney. That's the F-135 engine that powers the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter.
Yeah.
If they slow down that procurement, then we've got a problem in central Connecticut, and you don't want to see that either. So, Connecticut has benefited tremendously from defense purchases. There was a huge run-up in the 80s. There was a huge run-up again in the early 2000s, I forget. The run-ups come every sort of half a generation. And so if we're in a down cycle, that's not good.
Finally, Dan, a couple things I want to touch on you. One story, and I saw this story and I went, okay, and it has, and a warning to people, we're going to get into a little bit of an adult vein here, but listen to what we do on the show from time to time.
God.
Well, be as artistic as you can here. There is a debate, a measure, a bill, Dan. What's going on with, well, doctors who deal with fertility and what we expect them to do and not to do? Was that eloquent enough?
I just want to say that I have one child and I don't have 4,000.
Okay.
this is the issue around a doctor who worked with women or families on fertility issues, and he saw fit, I guess, in the primordial urge to spread your own seed, he saw fit to inseminate these women with his own sperm 4,000 times.
Oh.
And we had the shocking, and I mean shocking, I don't mean that tongue-in-cheek.
No, really.
Tongue-in-cheek an awful lot. But we had the shocking testimony on Monday of a woman who actually dated her half-brother. Not funny.
No.
And she said, this is a person I could have married. right? And of course, if it weren't for testing such as 23andMe and the other one, they never would have found out that they were half siblings. So that's
Wow.
It, the question here is not, is this shocking and terrible and shouldn't happen? The question is, does the system, the medical system, already take care of that?
Mm-hmm.
Because there was testimony that this is unethical, and it may have changed over the years, but if it wasn't already unethical, which some people would argue it was at all times, if it wasn't already unethical, it certainly isn't done now, and it wouldn't happen now. So in that way of thinking, the legislature doesn't have to step in and do anything, either in the form of criminal penalties or civil liability. But that's what the consideration is, civil liability in this.
Yeah.
And so, you know, legislatures like to act, and I don't have an opinion on what they should do, but the context is that they're being assured that this wouldn't happen again.
Yeah, odd to say the least. And finally, you know, I was skimming a story you wrote, Dan, about neighborhood safety patrols, and I saw a name of a good friend of mine, a rather prominent state legislator, and knowing his background, and he's one of my go-to guys on these issues, I was not surprised at the role he was taking in this neighborhood patrol organization.
Well, he actually is. We're talking about Representative Craig Fishbein from Wallingford, the conservative mm-hmm. lawyer and chair. I'm sorry, ranking member of the Judiciary Committee, of course. And he did show up at the invitation of a black church in Hartford, which the members, especially led by their pastor, were sick and tired of the violence that had been happening, especially a month ago in February, a double mm-hmm. murder, a double homicide. It's not a murder yet, a double homicide on that very street. And so he came and gave a talk about the do's and don'ts, the ins and outs of firearms possession and mm-hmm. transport in Connecticut. Now, this is way more complicated than most people think.
Oh, yeah.
The rules that you need to understand about firearms transfer and possession are copious. And he went through the details with this congregation and guests of the congregation. Some people would say that's odd because this is a black church, and this is filled with members who have, in some cases, advocated for easing back of criminal penalties,
mm-hmm.
especially by juveniles, by underage people, which Representative Fishbein has ardently opposed. He also pointed out to this congregation, they were there as members and guests of the congregation in the north end of Hartford. He also pointed out to that group of 30 or so people, pretty much filled the room, that if you have a felony record, you can't own a firearm.
Yeah.
He was one of the leaders in the opposition to the bill that did pass in 2022, I believe, or 21 or 22, which retires felony. It wipes out felony convictions.
Mm-hmm.
Certain felonies, not murder, certain, you know, class, I think, D and E or something, felonies after 7 years. And misdemeanors after 10, or 7 and felonies after 10, I should say.
Yeah.
So there's some sort of, some would say irony, some would say discordancy of him being there. I didn't see it that way. He's been an advocate of gun safety for years, and he would say that this was a continuation of that, and I would not disagree.
All right, great stuff as always. Dan Haar, Hearst, Connecticut Media. Read his stuff, all the Hearst publications, the Connecticut Post and all that. Editor and columnist Dan, have a great rest of the week. Stay safe, and we'll chat with you next week. Thank you, sir.
Great to be here. Have the rest of the week.
Thanks, Dan.
Rest of the week.
Appreciate it, my friend.
Bye.
Thanks. Take care. Yeah. Let's bring in a buddy of the program here, Chris Herb, who heads the Connecticut Energy Marketers Association. Chris was up at the Capitol today. Oh, we had the public hearing about a roadmap to EVs. Mr. Herb, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Oh, Paul, nervous as always when we have to come up and do this work.
How was the roadmap today, Chris? What did we learn about the roadmap today that was outlined, I guess, at this public hearing? Fill my listeners in, Chris. What did you hear? What did you see? What's going on?
Well, Paul, I'll start by saying that I thought that Groundhog Day passed, and
okay.
It seems like this ban on gasoline vehicles just keeps coming back and back and back. You know, it started in August, We thought we had it done there. Then it came back in November. Then it looked like it was going to come back again. But no, what basically happened today is that the new tact is to tell everyone they're going to study it. And the study is made up of a bunch of bureaucrats who've already publicly said that they're going to want to ban gasoline powered cars. So it was not an encouraging day.
As of last night, and I don't know, I confess, Chris, I don't know what the numbers were, but as of the numbers I got last night from the Yankee Institute, I mean, it was several hundred people who had submitted testimony against this and only a few dozen that were for it. What did you see up there? Now, I know submitted testimony is different from people getting actually to speak, but was there any sense that the deck might have been stacked on this one? Was this a legitimate testimony here? What'd you see?
I absolutely understand that there was a lot of written testimony against it, but I will tell you that the oral testimony that was given before the committee was in favor of moving forward with this. They were people who have been advocates for banning this. So while the written testimony was stacked against the bill, the people who showed up to speak were clearly outnumbered the ones who opposed like we did.
You know, Chris, finally, this drives me nuts. I mean, look, here's when EV adoption will be practical, and you won't have to force people to do it. When we fix the grid, when there's enough opportunity, Chris, that the grid can handle it, and we go by what the experts at UI and Eversource say, and when the price of EVs comes down, you don't need a roadmap. I don't know about you, but I think that's when the consumer and the market will say, hey, we're going to buy more EVs. What am I missing here?
No, this bill is about government control. It's about mandates. It's about banning the vehicles that we drive today. This is not about anything more than trying to force something to go forward. It's not about competition. It's not about free markets. It's not about what America was built on. It is about government designing the future. And I testified specifically to that point today, saying that typically when government designs something, it fails.
Did anybody, I mean, was there a back and forth between you and anybody? Or was it, Mr. Herb, thank you for coming and we'll see you later. Was anything dismissive today, or did they ask any honest questions?
Actually, Senator Tony Wong from Fairfield asked a number of questions about the free market. You know, he was very thoughtful in his questioning, and I think that went a long way into allow us to really fully explore some of the problems that we see in the bill. And Senator Cohen was asked a number of questions too. So it was not a shutdown. There was a conversation, and I'm encouraged by that, and I hope that wins the day because we're on the side of right here.
All right, Chris Herb, Connecticut Energy Marketers Association. Check him out online. Chris, thanks. Be careful. Two hands on the wheel. We'll talk down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate that.